Good morning. It's Monday, March 10th. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, Greenland votes on the future of the island. Should food stamps pay for soda? And Canada's Liberal Party selects Trudeau's successor. But first, a big week for lawmakers in Washington, as a partial government shutdown is set to begin Friday. Over the weekend, Speaker Mike Johnson introduced a stopgap spending bill that would keep the government funded through September. Included in the bill is a slight increase in defense spending, totaling around $892 billion, and a small cut to non-defense spending, totaling around $708 billion. The bill also adds an additional $485 million for ICE, a $20 billion cut to IRS enforcement, and an additional $500 million for WIC, the federal program that provides grocery assistance for low-income women and children. Here's Speaker Johnson talking to reporters in the halls of Capitol Hill about the bill.
I believe we'll pass it along party lines, but I think every Democrat should vote for the CR. It is a fundamental responsibility we have to fund the government, and a clean CR with a few minor anomalies is not something that they should vote against, so we'll see what they do.
Democrats came out quickly against the bill. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, in a statement with party leadership, criticized it for not explicitly protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Representative Rosa DeLauro, a top Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, called the domestic cuts in the bill a power grab by Trump and Elon Musk. Here she is speaking to MSNBC yesterday.
It's a blank check to Elon Musk and to President Trump, and it allows them, what I call, this is stealing. This is stealing taxpayers' dollars.
President Trump voiced his support for the proposed spending bill, posting on social media that all Republicans should vote yes and that, quote, we have to remain united, no dissent. That's, of course, because Republicans have only two votes to spare in the House. But a number of Republicans who in the past were against these types of stopgap measures are now saying they will support it.
Typically, I am not for continuing resolution because we ought to pass our appropriation bills in time.
That's Representative Ralph Norman, a Republican from South Carolina and member of the conservative House Freedom Caucus, speaking to Fox News.
I think that having a government shutdown now is not the proper thing.
He went on to say what's different now is the work that DOGE is doing, which he agrees with. NPR has been reviewing the claims made by the DOGE team and comparing them with federal contract data, and has so far found that the Trump administration is overstating the estimated savings totals by billions of dollars. If some of this to-the-brink spending negotiating sounds familiar, it's because it is. Late last year, heavy pressure and threats from Trump and Elon Musk torpedoed a bipartisan agreement in favor of the smaller current spending resolution that's set to expire on Friday. The New York Times reports this time around, bipartisan talks had been underway to find a way to pass a bill and wrestle some control back from President Trump on spending issues. But Republicans ran out of time and are hoping to instead push through what they can on party line votes. Speaker Johnson says he'll bring the bill to the floor tomorrow. President Trump has threatened for weeks now that he wants America to take Greenland, a large island in the Arctic Ocean with a population of 56,000 people. In fact, he specifically called out his intentions in last week's joint address to Congress.
We need it really for international world security, and I think we're going to get it. One way or the other, we're going to get it.
Well, tomorrow, Greenlanders will vote in what might be the most consequential election of their lifetimes. The vote, while technically unrelated to Trump's goals of territorial expansion, has certainly been influenced by it.
There is a lot at stake this time around.
That's Bloomberg reporter Sanna Vass, based in Denmark.
It will really define the future for Greenland, of course, but it will ultimately also impact a lot of other things, geopolitics and potentially the whole path of Greenland's independence and future partners.
In tomorrow's parliamentary elections, Greenlanders will be deciding whether to support politicians who have called for independence from Denmark, which colonized Greenland 300 years ago. It was a Danish colony until 1953. Today, Greenland is an autonomous territory of Denmark that receives annual funding from Copenhagen to fund its police, judiciary, and defense, among other things. In a recent poll in Greenland, 56% of respondents supported having an independent state. But with Trump now vying to take control, it's given voters there more to think about. Some believe it's even more important to be independent. Others argue that separating from Denmark could make it far more vulnerable to the threat of American colonization. Vass told us a few reasons why Trump sees Greenland as valuable. Aside from it already being home to a U.S. military base that monitors space and missile threats, the island has a vast amount of natural resources, including rare earth minerals that are critical to high-tech industries.
And they are now becoming more accessible as the vast ice sheets in Greenland are melting because of climate change. And at the same time, climate change is also expected to kind of expand the Arctic shipping routes, and that will give Greenland potentially a very important role in global trade in the future. So there are a lot of things about Greenland that make it potentially valuable to Trump.
85% of Greenlanders oppose joining the United States. And for those who support independence, Trump's interest in the island has buoyed their cause.
It's almost as if Trump's comments have made them realize that they can. They're worth much more than they thought they were, and they have potential partners outside of Denmark. And so the big question for future lawmakers that get elected this week is, when are they ready to become independent, and who might they collaborate with in the future?
Recently, Donald Trump Jr. visited the territory, followed by the Nelk Boys, a group of Gen Z right-leaning influencers on YouTube who handed out $100 bills telling locals, "Welcome to America." One father whose son came home with a $100 bill told Bloomberg he found it, quote, disgusting, and that it crossed a line. However tomorrow's vote plays out, one former chief analyst at the Danish Defense Intelligence Service told Bloomberg that it could have a far-reaching impact on Europe's security. Let's turn now to a political battle involving soda. President Trump is a big fan. He reportedly has several Diet Cokes a day. But Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. calls it poison and wants to make it so Americans can't spend their food aid benefits on it. Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Peterson told us about the efforts to modify SNAP, that's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
There have been lawmakers and states from the Republican Party, Democratic Party, for years who have been discussing whether the government should be subsidizing these purchases. And they believe that it could boost the sort of overall nutritional impact of the food aid program if you said, we're not going to let people use these benefits to buy sugary desserts or sugary drinks.
Lawmakers in New York, Minnesota, and Arkansas have advocated for restricting less healthy items from the SNAP program. But for more than 20 years, the USDA has rejected these types of requests, saying that it would be too logistically challenging to implement.
That's been a longstanding argument that this is going to place a burden on retailers. It's going to be hard to go through every item and decide which has to be restricted and which can be included in the program. Are cashiers going to have to play interference?
Proponents of these restrictions say those questions are less relevant in the digital age.
There's also an argument you hear from Democrats and anti-hunger groups that say people on the food aid program have the same dignity as everyone else. We shouldn't be telling them what they can and can't eat. We don't tell anyone else what they can and can't eat.
Lobbyists for major soda companies like Coca-Cola and PepsiCo have made similar arguments.
They're making a political argument that President Trump's supporters and the people who voted for him in their polling do not want to restrict soda. And they make an argument that doing so would make these people feel like second-class citizens and that it would not score any political points for President Trump or Republicans.
This puts Kennedy at odds with Trump and his base. The administration's willingness to change course on the SNAP program could be tested soon. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders has said she plans to ask the USDA to restrict certain items, potentially including soda, from SNAP eligibility in her state. And Trump's Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins has seemed open to that. But Peterson told us it's not totally clear whether Trump will follow his health secretary's lead or stick to his usual order. Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. The measles outbreak in Texas has now infected more than 200 people in the state and neighboring New Mexico. Texas health officials said 23 people have been hospitalized, and there's been one death of a school-aged child in the outbreak area, centered in Gaines County near the New Mexico border. In New Mexico, 30 cases are confirmed, and a person who died there tested positive for measles, although it's not been determined whether it was the cause of death. The Guardian reports shortages of measles vaccines are hitting Texas cities as demand soars. The CDC says nationwide cases jumped by a third over the past week, and there are currently confirmed cases in 12 states. Intense fighting in the past few days between Syria's new government and forces loyal to ousted former President Bashar al-Assad have led to the deaths of more than 1,300 people, mostly civilians, the worst violence in Syria since the toppling of Assad's regime in December. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says many of the killings were revenge executions carried out against the Alawite community, which was Assad's base of support. Leaders in the Alawite community say they have been targeted since Assad's fall and that the gunmen loyal to the former regime do not represent them. And finally, Canada knows who its next prime minister will be. The Liberal Party on Sunday chose Mark Carney to replace Justin Trudeau, who announced in January he would step down. Carney has a banking background and led the country through the 2008 global financial crisis as governor of the Bank of Canada, the country's equivalent of the Federal Reserve. CBS News reports many Canadians are hoping Carney's expertise in the financial sector will help the country as it deals with a lingering trade war and tariff threats from the Trump administration. Carney said, like Trump, he would enact dollar-for-dollar tariffs against the U.S. and leverage Canada's role as an energy supplier. It's not clear how long Carney will hold office. He does not hold a seat in Parliament and is expected to call elections soon after being sworn in. He'll face off against Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre in those elections. Meanwhile, Trump said over the weekend he wouldn't rule out a recession this year, acknowledging the turbulence in the U.S. economy since he announced new tariffs. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. Bloomberg Businessweek looks at the elusive billionaire behind the world's most popular vapes. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.